Hello and welcome to the Pain in the Arsenal podcast. My name is Andrew Dalbo. I'll be here with Josh and Henry discussing all the good and bad about Arsenal Football Club. Let's get started.
Hello and welcome to the Pain in the Arsenal podcast. We are recording on a Monday night, so some of the things that we say in the coming hour or so may be a little bit of out of date by the time you're hearing that, so just keep that in mind as you're listening. But for the moment, Alexis Sanchez is still an Arsenal player, somehow.
No, he's not really, though.
Well, he's half an Arsenal player, I guess.
There we go, yeah.
Mesut Ozil or Jack Wilshere haven't signed a contract, and nobody has come in other than Konstantinos Mavropanos, I think, who is playing, as we speak, in the Arsenal under-23 game, which is quite exciting. So, really, there's a lot going on. There's a lot of flux in regard to the club at the moment. No one really knows what's going to happen. Even Wenger said himself he doesn't know what's going to happen. So, Josh, are you worried? Because Arsenal always seem to cock these things up, don't they?
I'm actually kind of excited. And, again, the running joke, I'm overly optimistic. But you get to the point where you've dreaded so much all the things that can go wrong, that you kind of just accept them, and you accept all the things that could mess up, and there are plenty of things, but then you realize that aside from those things, there are also some things that could go right, and there are a lot of things in this January window that could go right, which is why I'm so optimistic that even with Arsene Wenger in charge, as much in charge as he is with the board, I still don't think we know everything that goes on between Arsene Wenger and the board and who's actually in power. But I do think, strangely, I have this trust that Arsene Wenger will do what's right and will actually surprise us, because he does do that sometimes, oddly enough. and I think if there was an opportunity for him to do that, well, you're not going to find a better opportunity than this. So, I am optimistic, because there's really nothing else to be at this point. I mean, we just watched our team lose to Bournemouth in a really pathetic affair, so
yeah.
I guess I just have to be excited or optimistic that it has to get better at some point.
I get I can get on board with the excitement in the uncertainty, just because change is always exciting, even if you're a little bit hesitant to it. Whether I'm optimistic about that change is probably another word. I'm kind of intrigued, would be the word, really. I'm intrigued to see what will happen, because we've never been here. Arsenal have had contracts running down of their star players before, and they've always been sold with 12 months to go or 18 months to go. They've never got to the 6-month stage. It just doesn't happen. So, for the first time, in my memory at least, we're here with two players, and obviously Wilshere, who we will talk about at some point. You could argue three players who are established members of the squad, key members of the first team, are all in the final few months of their contracts, and it's new, it's exciting, it's different. It's also a little bit scary, because we saw on Sunday how mediocre this team, I think, is without those players. Let's talk about the game briefly. It was a 2-1 loss to Bournemouth. I think the first thing to note was the defensive mistakes were really criminal, weren't they, in that second half?
Yeah, but I mean, it really confused me when he took off Callum Chambers. Because, I mean, other than the goal that Callum Wilson scored, it was kind of just like a lucky stroke of what. I mean, it was bad defending, granted, but it wasn't like a complete downfall of the defense. I mean, it was more so just, it was a solid play by Bournemouth. I mean, they took advantage, and I don't think that required breaking down the defense, especially taking out Callum Chambers, who I thought had been really good up until that point, better than Rob Holding at least, who, after Rob Holding decided to take the ball across our own goal box all the way to the other side, I if he would have taken him out right there, I would have saluted him.
there were a few moments in that first half where Arsenal looked very nervous on the ball. Holding, Chambers and Mustafi, all three of them, there was quite a few shank clearances into the stand, wasn't there?
But I will take a shank clearance over dwelling over the ball and losing
yes.
it any
yes.
day.
No, absolutely.
And that's why I was pretty optimistic about the way the game was going. because even though we weren't inspiring a lot on the attack, it was still looking pretty solid on the defense. Of course, that was until it all went wrong. And as we know with Arsenal, once something goes wrong, it's usually not the only thing to go wrong. There's usually a lot that follows.
Yeah, the capitulation begins.
Yeah,
and I think, really for me, I mean, you look at that first goal, the mistakes that were made were, again, they were mental positional errors, really. You look at when I don't know who crossed the ball. Was it Ryan Fraser, I think, who crossed the ball?
I think so, yeah.
There were four Arsenal players next to him. So, obviously, Maitland-Niles is there as the left wing back. Granit Xhaka's come over to help him, which is quite okay. That's in that situation, that's a good decision to have made. But then Rob Holding and Skodran Mustafi are both right over there as well. Neither of them are marking the front post and trying to block any cross coming in. And what happened is both of them were sucked to the ball earlier in the move. And a couple of passes then down the line into the space that they'd vacated then left Arsenal completely exposed. And then obviously Callum Wilson uses his speed to get in front of Hector Bellerin and then Callum Chambers and Petr Cech to the ball first. And it is a good cross.
Yeah.
But the defensive errors that were made, that there were only two of them, or two amalgamations of them from certain players. But they were costly, and we have seen this narrative many, many times before. And Wenger, after the game, said he described them as very surprising.
Which is the greatest joke of all, because there's nothing surprising about those mistakes. We've seen them before.
Well, exactly. He said Arsenal made two very surprising defensive errors, which, in context of the game, I kind of get what he means, because Arsenal did look solid. But in the context of the season and the club and the number of years, over the last decade, this have been the recurring issues for this team, and they have still not been addressed. So I wasn't shocked to see them, unfortunately. Not many other fans were shocked either. And I guess it's just something that for me stems from Wenger and the coaches, not just the individual players, even if they were to blame for that specific moment.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said there. I do think it has to come down to coaching more than players, because, like you said, we've seen these mistakes so many times across so many different players. That said, I do have a lot of faith in this young defense. When they're really keyed in, they look good. I still think Rob Holding is kind of the fluctuating weakest link of the three of them. Obviously, there's still a lot of talent there, but he makes some Gabriel Paulista mistakes sometimes where I just wonder what's going on in his head. It just doesn't seem to make sense to me what he's trying to do. Whereas Chambers, whenever he gets in trouble for like the next four games, all he does is clear the ball away as soon as he gets it. And I'm fine with that all day. Like I said, I'd much rather see that than what Holding did, dribbling across the face of goal without any direction.
I think you can see that Chambers has spent a year on loan with Middlesbrough. Yeah. Can't you? You can see that influence on him.
Yeah. And, I mean, I thought our midfield was actually pretty good, too. I mean, I know Granit Xhaka on the second goal was largely responsible for not tracking the run, but maybe it's my Granit Xhaka agenda again, but I thought he was good up until that point. I thought he defended very well. And, I mean, he led the team in chances created. He actually created four of the nine chances that Arsenal had. And, you know, I think it's important to highlight positive individual performances so we don't lose track of them, because he has had some good performances buried in what has been a pretty bad season for the team and for him.
I thought his distribution was poor again.
Yeah.
But I do agree, other than for the goal, defensively he was better. And that's something that has been my main criticism of him, rather than his passing.
And I do get tired of his shots, but honestly, when our defense or when our offense looks as stale as it is, I don't mind somebody just having a crack, because Lord knows we need something to happen, because it's not going to happen through Welbeck and Iwobi.
No, and it's actually quite un-Arsenal-like, isn't it, to shoot from distance?
Yeah, it is, which is why every time it happens, I get so excited. I'm like, oh, it's going to be something great, and then it just squibs off to the right. I'm like, ah, he got me again.
Yeah, I mean, I am frustrated with his repetitive shooting that never really seems to trouble any keeper. But
it only happens, he only starts doing it after he scores a goal. It's like he gets yes. fired up and thinks, oh, I can score all the time now.
Yeah, and he gets a bit excited, doesn't he? Yeah, yeah. But having said that, for 15 years I've been frustrated with Arsenal trying to walk the ball in the net, so at least it's something different to be frustrated about.
Exactly.
But as ever with this club, there is, of course, something to be frustrated about. Speaking of, I think we're both in agreement, really, that it's time for Wenger to leave. I think that's something that is fairly agreed upon in Arsenal circles. Even the most loyal of Wenger fans, and I would certainly count myself as one of them, for the betterment of the club, Wenger should not be the manager anymore. Whether people would like him to be sacked now, or whether they would prefer to wait until the end of the year, that probably varies. For me, I would rather see him stay as manager till the end of the season and then look to get a more long-term replacement in. But I feel that most people would like Wenger to leave the club. Would you, just preliminary, would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think I count myself as a very loyal Arsene Wenger supporter too, just because I really do admire not just what he's brought to the club, but who he is as a person.
Yes.
I like
yeah,
that
me
as
too.
A manager. I like the classiness, and people play that down, but I think it is a big deal. I take so much pride knowing that my manager is not Jose Mourinho.
Yeah.
Because he's just he's a sniveling, whiny little... I'll stop there. But I like the class that Arsene Wenger brings. But I think the moment when I really realize that it's time to go is seeing how despondent Lacazette looks out there, because he should never, ever, ever be playing in front of Iwobi and Danny Welbeck. I don't know how you get to the point where Alexis's situation has gotten so bad and you don't have anybody else that you have to start those two people behind him, because that's just not good enough. And there's no world where that is good enough, and we shouldn't have to keep sending them out there because we don't have anyone else.
Yeah.
A club of Arsenal stature should never have to say, well, we don't have anyone else. Because that, I don't care what injuries you go through, you adjust. There's no reason why Iwobi, Welbeck, and Walcott should be your only options.
So depressing, isn't it?
Just saying it again, I'm like, that's really where we are right now.
Yeah. For me, the time of Wenger's come because of the consistency of the problems. They're the same ones that Arsenal had 10 years ago. In fact, 15 years ago now. They're not new problems. They're problems that everybody can see, and everybody has been able to see for many years. Every summer I say Arsenal are two or three players from winning the Premier League, and they're always the same two or three players. and I don't think anything has changed this summer. I think assuming good replacements for Alexis and Ozil are found, Arsenal again are still only two or three players from at least challenging Manchester City, which is ridiculous to say, but it's true. And I feel go on.
I was going to say it might be a different set of players needed, because we'll have Lacazette this time, so we won't have to say we're a striker away because we'll have that striker.
Yes,
but it's the same difference. It's still not the same number of players.
And yeah, yeah,
playing on a different position.
Yeah, and I have no confidence in Wenger, A, being willing to spend the money to sign them, and B, being having the ability to actually find the correct player for the correct position and in the correct mould. So, Wenger is a problem of this club, but he's certainly not the only problem. There are major issues at board level. There's obviously an issue with Stan Kroenke. If you could choose one to leave, whether it be Wenger or Gazidis or Kroenke or Sikships Kezik or someone else, who would you most want to see out of this club? Because I think most people would like all of them to go, really.
If you could get rid of Stan Kroenke, I would keep every other person. There are very few people in this world who I dislike more than Stan Kroenke. Now, there's a history behind this. Stan
yes,
Kroenke,
I might want to give a bit of background.
I grew up in St. Louis, Missouri. Stan Kroenke is from just down the road in Columbia, Missouri, which is about an hour away. He owns the old St. Louis Rams, that used to be the St. Louis Rams, and he treated that city, my city, like complete garbage when he moved the Rams out of St. Louis to L.A., and it was clear why he did it. He did it for the money. It was always for the money. And we've always known this about Stan Kroenke. You don't have to pull out more examples that he only wants the money. But just having that connection that he's already ruined one team. All of his sports franchises aren't that good. He owns a bunch. None of them are that great. I'd have to look, but I don't even know if he's won any championships ever. And you know, just to see it happening on a bigger scale to Arsenal, because obviously Arsenal is a much bigger worldwide team than the St. Louis Rams or the Colorado Rapids, another one of his teams. To see that he can do it on such a big scale just shows how much power he has and how little regard he has for people like you or me who love this team and players that love the team. And I still think, and I hope that one day we'll get clarification on this, that Arsene Wenger is handcuffed by him. I really do think that, and I think Arsene Wenger has hinted that in time he'll be able to say more, but right now he can't. And I don't know, I hope that at some point he's able to come clean of what impact Kroenke had in all of this, because there's no reason why the second richest club in the world can't spend that money like United and City and Liverpool do. And the only reason why they wouldn't be able to is if Stan Kroenke has the wallet with him, and Arsene Wenger has to go to him like a kid asking his parents for, you know, a full run his allowance and ask, can I have this money to go sign such and such? And if you don't have a good reason, he's going to say no. Yeah, I would get rid of Kroenke, hands down. Not even close. I don't even have to think about it. In fact, I think if you get rid of him, most of our problems go away. I think you get rid of Wenger, great, maybe the next manager energizes them, but he's going to fall into the same problems Wenger did if Kroenke has the influence that I think he does.
Yeah, I think to provide a little bit of context for the St. Louis Rams move, it would be like Stan Kroenke saying, okay, Arsenal in North London is commercially viable, it's fairly successful, but I can pocket another £10 million if I move them to Stoke. So I'm going to put Arsenal in Stoke, and I'm going to buy Stoke Stadium, and I'm going to say, right, Arsenal, you can play in Stoke now. And all of the fans in London, in and around the local area, now have no team to support. They have to support Spurs.
It sounds so silly, but that's very true. That's exactly what it's like.
Yeah, and actually, it's worse than that, because Los Angeles is a lot further away than St. Louis is from Stoke to London. It's not a couple of hours drive up the road. That is for sure. So really, he has completely changed the trajectory of that franchise purely for the benefit of his own wallet, and I have a fear that he's probably doing the same thing at Arsenal. He's certainly not completely revolved around trophies. That's for certain.
No, he is a businessman first and foremost, which, I mean, if that's who he is, we should just all accept. It's not that he's dishonest or anything. He's just a businessman. He's not the kind of guy you want owning your sports team, because he wants the money, because that's just what he does.
Yeah. I grew up in Sheffield, so a lot of my friends of Sheffield Wednesday fans, and they've just signed a new, I think she's like a commercial director or sporting director or something. And she was at Charlton Athletic before. And there's a truly horrendous video popped up on social media and stuff of her doing like kind of like fans Q&A and stuff. And she's talking about how the club sees the fans. And she's used the word customers, which really sums up the business approach that she has of a football club. She sees them as customers, not as fans. And I have a feeling that Kroenke sees Arsenal fans as customers, not fans, and he doesn't care about their love for the club. She goes on to talk about how when they send emails to her, they write it as if they have ownership of the club, so they'll say it's our club or it's our team. Is, you know, we, us, and our is you know, the phrase that all football fans use about their team, as if they own it. And she found that ridiculous, because they have no ownership in the club, they're customers. But that's not what football fans are. It's completely and utterly wrong. and I fear that Kroenke has a very similar idea as to what fans are, is they are customers to line his wallet, which is extremely sad, really.
No, it is, because obviously sports is so much more than the money it pulls in, but I mean, when you look at it from his perspective, that's all it is. And I guess on the bright side, that could bode well for Aubameyang, because he'd sell a hell of a lot of shirts if he came over here.
Yes, well, you mentioned Aubameyang. Let's move on to more pressing issues, because while Kroenke and Wenger are problems that I think need solving at some point, really they're not going to see a resolution, you know, in the next week or month or even the next year. It's going to take a long, long time for those issues to be addressed. Aubameyang is an aspect of an issue that will be, per Wenger, addressed in the next 24 to 48 hours, and that is the assumingly imminent departure of Alexis Sanchez. Firstly, do you think he will go, or do you think he will stay?
I hope he goes, and I do think he will. I mean,
yeah,
I don't buy into rumors that often, but when you have so many rumors saying the exact same thing, you have to start listening to them, and I do think it's his time now.
Yeah, it seems, in fact, it doesn't even seem like a matter of when, because Wenger said it will be in the next 24 to 48 hours. It seems a matter of how, I guess. Is it City? Is it United? Is it for cash? Is there a player involved? What wages does he get? It's those kind of questions that are being answered now, not the question of will he leave. It feels like that's already been wrapped up. So, from an Arsenal perspective, Wenger said in the past that Arsenal have to sign top quality players to replace Alexis Sanchez. Do you think the names that they are going after, the most prominent for Aubameyang, as previously mentioned, Anthony Martial and Henrik Mkhitaryan as some form of make-weight from Manchester United, and then also Malcolm from Bordeaux, do you think they are of the quality that Arsenal need to be chasing in terms of a successor for Alexis?
Yeah, I mean, some of them are obviously a bit more experienced than others, but I don't think it's a bad idea to ditch Alexis and go for somebody that's more or less experienced, because I mean, then at least you get to mold him into what you want him to be, which can be helpful. But I mean, yeah, and I think the only reason why he wouldn't leave is if he can't secure any of those four guys, because obviously he's not gonna sell him without having somebody in return. He's made that perfectly clear, and it's obvious from how long it's taken to get rid of him that without a replacement, he's not going anywhere. Mm. But I do like those four. I mean, I guess Aubameyang is the most interesting, because he requires the most question. I mean, there are a lot of questions he brings up, especially the fact that he's a striker, and we already have one of those, one that we just bought. So you have to wonder what the plan would be if we're going to switch to a two-striker set, which Arsene Wenger just seems so opposed to lately.
I mean, in the 3-4-3, he has shifted a little bit to a 3-5-2, where Ozil has started in a deeper and more central position, and Sanchez has been pushed up alongside Lacazette. I wonder if Aubameyang would, if he were to be signed, would suggest a shift towards that kind of formation.
I've always thought that having that pairing Lacazette with somebody is a fantastic idea. I don't think it worked well with Alexis, but I don't think much was working with Alexis by that point. I guess my concern with Aubameyang is, you know, we might run into the same situation where does he really want to be there? Because I mean, we've tried to sign him in the past, and he wasn't interested. And, you know, even now there are reports that he might come to Arsenal, but it's not his first choice. And you know, he right now with Dortmund, a team that really raised him, that made him who he is today, he's treating them so poorly that their sporting director had to say, "I don't even recognize him anymore."
Yeah.
And that you really got to ask if that's the kind of person that you want on your team, because that's the kind of person that I think Alexis has become. Although nobody would ever say such things about Alexis. You know, Wenger wouldn't, and I don't think Kroenke even knows who Alexis is. So I guess that's my concern with Aubameyang. Plus, the main way we would coax him over here is by paying him a ridiculous amount of money, which, again, you've got to ask, is that the motivation you want for a guy to come here?
Yeah.
To just about the money.
Do you think the presence of Sven Mislintat, obviously he has been at Borussia Dortmund for many years, do you think that maybe has had a weighting on Aubameyang's decision?
I don't know, because, I mean, I really wouldn't know how much Aubameyang and Mislintat really interacted after he signed with them, because, I mean, again, I don't know this for sure. I'm guessing Mislintat was the guy that found Aubameyang.
That is the report, yes, is that
yeah.
He was the guy shouting for him.
But then after you find him, I'm not sure how much he would have played a part in Aubameyang's growth there.
Yep. No, that's fair.
Maybe there's some affection for Aubameyang towards Mislintat for giving him that chance, but I don't think that would be enough to draw him over to Arsenal. I think that the main attraction to Arsenal is going to be if they can pay him what he wants to be paid.
Mm. Yes. No, I think you are right. And certainly there have been other reports of, I guess, attitude problems from Aubameyang, especially more recently as he's become played a bigger and bigger part in that Dortmund team, is that there are elements of the German media and British media that have suggested that he and whoever his coach is don't necessarily get along, and that he's not necessarily nice, I guess, to his teammates, and there's an element of him feeling superior to those around him because he's the best player on that team and he's their most important player, and you know, the stats show that out, that he is their most important player, but there's a feeling that he knows it, and again, that's not really the kind of characters that you want in your team. Alexis seems like a very similar type character where he knows that he's Arsenal's best and most influential attacker. If Aubameyang, certainly in terms of quality, is probably the best of the four, but if he's not the best in terms of fit, perhaps, whether that be character or age, do you think the best fit is Malcolm from Bordeaux?
Yeah, I'm really sold on Malcolm, and I'm not going to claim that I've been watching him for the past 3 years and know everything about him, but from what I've watched and from what I know, he seems like not only the perfect fit, but the perfect kind of guy that Arsene Wenger would want to have on his team. Because he does fit right into that Alexis mold, where he's not blazingly fast, he's not known for zipping down and doing the Welbeck thing and just running to the touchline and then trying to figure something out. I mean, we all saw his assist over the weekend.
Yeah.
That's what he's in the team to do. He's a very creative mind, and he's so young to the point that, like I mentioned earlier, you can really mold him to be what you want him to be, because he has the ability to be a lot of things for a big club like Arsenal.
Yeah.
It doesn't bother me that he doesn't have Premier League experience like Martial would. Because I think the second best thing to Premier League experience is any sort of experience on a lower tier team in the top five divisions, because that gives you a kind of similar situation where you're playing with guys that aren't, you're probably one of the best on the team, and you're playing against teams that are better than you, and he's still producing incredibly well in those circumstances.
Yeah.
So I don't think we have anything to worry about in terms of him not being able to catch on right away.
Yeah.
And plus, since Mislintat wanted him at Dortmund, then gotta trust in him.
Yes, certainly that, you know, Arsenal signed or hired Mislintat for a reason. You've now got to trust that hiring was correct, otherwise why did you hire him in the first place? I think Malcolm, probably his biggest advantage is his age, the fact that he's only 20. This is only his second season in any European league. You can, like you say, you can mould him into what you want him to be. And that's true with Martial. We'll get onto Martial in a minute. That's certainly less true with Aubameyang, and I'd say that it's completely impossible to do with Mkhitaryan, because Mourinho is a coach who would want to mould him into what he wants, and he has not been able to do that over the last 18 months. So, really, Malcolm is an extremely talented player who Arsenal can fit to what they want or need. rather than having to fit their team around him, if that makes sense. He's also probably cheaper than Aubameyang. The reports are around a €45 million fee, which is maybe perhaps around £35 million, which would be about the same as what Arsenal are going to sell Sanchez to if they to United if they do sell him. So in terms of price, you're breaking even and you're saving 9 years on Alexis Sanchez. That's kind of the whole point of the transfer, is to bring in somebody of the same level but who's 9 years younger, and you've got another decade out of what should be a fairly similar player. Do you think this is the most likely deal of the four names to have been most prominently mentioned? Do you think this is the most likely one to happen?
Yeah, just because he seems like he's the most available and the best fit. Again, like I said, this isn't just about a good fit for the team. It's a good fit for Arsene Wenger. I don't think he wants to deal with Aubameyang. I don't think United want to give up Martial. I don't think that Mkhitaryan is a good idea for us, nor do I think he wants to come over here. So,
yep.
I mean, there's no reason why Malcolm wouldn't want to come here. I mean, it's a great step towards a building of his career.
Yep.
So, yeah, I think all the signs point to that being the most likely option.
Yep. And Arsenal can certainly sell it as this is pretty depressing to say, but Arsenal can say, well, we can be your stepping stone club. You can play with us for 4 or 5 years, really establish yourself, and then by the time you're 25, you're just entering your prime. You can then go and make that £100-150 million move to a Barcelona or a Real Madrid or whoever you have your eyes set on. Which, unfortunately, that's the standing of Arsenal Football Club at the moment. They can't, in terms of being able to convince a player to join them, they're not going to be able to rival the likes of a Real or even a City or a United. They're after the players who are below that level, and they're hoping to develop them at Arsenal, which is something that in recent years they've been very much unable to do. The two other players who have been most prominently mentioned with the move are Martial and Mkhitaryan, the two United players. Mkhitaryan was left out of the squad altogether for their game against Stoke, which is on as speaking. Martial is starting, and he's actually just scored. So it looks, of the two, if one of them is going to sign with Arsenal, it would be Mkhitaryan, not Martial. Mourinho, before the game, said that he was dropped, he said he would be lying if he was dropped solely because of tactical reasons. So there's certainly something going on there. Would either of these two players interest you in an Arsenal shirt?
I would like Mkhitaryan if he could go back to the form he was in before he chose United in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Because his last year at Dortmund was fantastic, and everybody wanted him, and we yep. wanted him too. We were in on that, but he chose the money and went to United, and now he's benched, and not even benched. He's not even in the same, locker room. He's somewhere else. But I would like him, but again, it's from that whole reinvention standpoint of if he's able to go back to where he was. And obviously, I'd like Martial too. I'm trying not to get too into that, because that doesn't seem likely to happen at all. Every time we're linked to him, United just absolutely reject it straight out. There's no chance. So I try not to invest too much thought into that idea.
Yeah, I certainly, it feels like United want Mkhitaryan to be a part of the deal. Arsenal want Martial to be a part of the deal. And it feels like neither will end up being part of the deal, and that it will be a fee of around £35 million, something like that. Which is fine, to be honest. With a player with 6 months on the contract, in today's market, Sanchez might be worth £100 million if he's got a full-on contract, but he doesn't. And if Arsenal get £35 million, I think that's a very respectable fee that they can't really complain at, in all honesty. It is extremely depressing. It is very depressing. Maybe exciting is the wrong word. It's intriguing to see what will happen and what the team will look like without Alexis and whoever comes in for him. But, we've been here so many times talking about what's going to happen when player X leaves, and here we are again, and it feels like we're going to be in exactly the same situation in 3 or 4 months when Mesut Ozil still hasn't signed a new contract and can walk away on a free at the end of the year. The one the one real concerning thing is that in all of this, he is being completely forgotten and no one's really talking about him. And at the moment, he's more important than Alexis is. And I also think that's probably a smart play from his PR team, where the fans have certainly turned on Sanchez, but they're still fairly loyal to Ozil at this moment in time. Do you think, just out of interest, do you think Ozil will? I'd be surprised if he leaves in January, but do you think he'll sign a new contract?
I'm much less confident now than I was a few weeks ago. I always worry about his phantom injuries. I've seen it too many times where these injuries have just been him, not Ozil in particular, but players getting injured just so because they don't want to play or because they're negotiating with other teams. And he can negotiate with other teams right now, which is, I mean, I wouldn't say scary to think about, because, like I said, at this point, I'm not really dreading anything anymore. The worst that can happen is Alexis and Ozil leave. And, you know, whatever. That sounds pretty bad.
That sounds pretty bad to me.
But, I mean, I don't know. I guess I have this blind trust that even if they do leave, we have to get someone in return. And I do think that's something we have to keep in mind. There's no way we let either one of them go without bringing someone else in. And I think we're seeing that with Alexis right now. And all four of the guys that are linked, assuming we're going to get one of those four, I think there's a lot of optimism to be found around all of them, even Mkhitaryan, because there is quality there. But, you know, I worry because Arsene Wenger said, oh, we'll have all these contracts wrapped up by the end of December. And here we are halfway through January, and nothing is wrapped up. And aside from Alexis, nobody's any closer, as far as we can tell. And Ozil isn't playing. And as long as he's not playing, then all we can do is speculate on what he's doing while he's not playing. And it's not fun to sit here and think of all the teams he could be talking to about who he can join in the summer, because all I can think of is him and Alexis reuniting at Manchester United, which would just be the worst thing in the world. But I think of all of that, I think the one thing I really worry about is Jack Wilshere and why he doesn't have a new contract yet. Yeah. I mean, for like Alexis and Ozil, I get it. These are superstars. I don't think, you know, they can say they love Arsenal all they want. There was no point where they were as invested in this team as Jack Wilshere.
No, absolutely.
And Wilshere wore that armband against Chelsea, and he came out with those statements about how that was his dream and how this was all he's ever wanted. And then as payment, they give the armband to Petr Cech next time out. And he still doesn't have a contract. And, you know, I don't care if you treat Alexis or Ozil. I mean, I do care, but not as much. If you treat them poorly, if you just kind of shun them out of the club. But you don't do that to Jack Wilshere.
Yeah, I
you
mean, they've treated the club poorly, haven't they? So you're only...
Yeah, exactly. So,
certainly Alexis, anyway.
And there's speculation that the only thing that could possibly be holding up a Wilshere deal is if they're trying to shortchange him on his wages, which is just horrifying to think about why you would ever need to do that. Because I don't think, and again, this is total speculation, but I don't think Wilshere would be sitting there holding out for a 200,000 a week contract. I don't think that doesn't seem like him. I think the main thing is he just wants to be here. But he still wants to be paid his worth. And it worries me that there's a chance that the holdup is that they won't pay him his worth.
Yeah, and on Sunday, that was his best performance of the season, really. I mean, he was magnificent. He was Arsenal's best player by absolute country mile. The number of times that he would get the ball from a fairly bad Callum Chambers or Rob Holding or Skodran Mustafi pass that was bounced up at his chest area with a defender on his back without space, without time, and then he'd somehow managed to spin away and then drive forward, and then suddenly it would be a 4-on-4 and Arsenal would be driving at the Bournemouth defence. He did it on three or four different occasions. His touch was brilliant. The way that he was able to exploit his body position and then work his way into space was really outstanding, and he was just brilliant. He was Wilshere at his very best, where he kind of glides past players. He looks a lot slower than he actually is. He's really very sharp, and he can really kind of burst away from players in short spaces. His dribbling was very good. His passing was good. He was creative. there was very little wrong with that performance whatsoever. And again, it just established why it's so important to sign a new contract. I think a new one will happen. Wenger said he thinks it will happen. Wilshere said he thinks it will happen. It feels like a matter of time rather than anything else. But there is a concern as to why it hasn't happened. Because... No, go ahead.
Well,
I guess, really, everything's in place. It's just a case of, you know, putting the round pegs in the round holes. They're ready to be pressed in. It's just a case of doing it, and I don't know why they've not been done. It feels like it's a tap in, but Arsenal are waiting for some reason. I don't know why.
Yeah, and I think it was Arsene Wenger said before the match that his he wants to play the players that are focused right now. And I don't know if focus is the number one thing I'd be going for. I feel like determination and the desire...
Commitment.
Yeah, that's a good word for it. And there was... Before the match, Robbie Earle was talking... And I rarely ever agree with anything either Robbie says. But Robbie Earle had a really good point, and he said... After seeing Alexis was out, he compared it to when West Ham lost Dimitri Payet. And he said when West Ham players knew that Payet was leaving, they essentially just got together and said, okay, this is happening. He was our power source. Now let's get better. We all want to be here. Let's become better for the team. And I really thought, and he even said that's what Arsenal needs to do. And I kind of thought, well, that's what we're going to see against Bournemouth. We're going to see a team come together over the departure of the guy that had been their best player. And honestly, the only guy out there who looked like he kind of got that memo or wanted that to happen was Jack Wilshere. He was the only guy that looked like he wanted to make things happen. And, you know, there were good performers on the day. Again, I think Xhaka was a good performer. I think there were other performers out there, but they don't have that spark or that inherent creativity to actually make things happen like Wilshere did. And it was really disappointing because we had plenty of capable players out there, and it's like they all just seem to lack a direction. Like maybe Alexis isn't there to hold their hand anymore and make them look better than they really are, and they all just kind of felt like, well, what do we do now? Who's going to help us? And nobody is. You got to step up and do it for yourself, and only Jack Wilshere did that.
Yeah, it was stark, I think, how much he stood out from his teammates and from many of the Bournemouth players as well. He is one of the more important contracts to tie down, I think, because he wants to stay. Getting Ozil, or obviously, I don't think Alexis will sign a new contract now, but even 6 months, 12 months ago, getting either of them to sign a contract would have been a bit of a coup for the club. If they fail to get a Wilshere contract, then there's some real problems there, because that's the one that they should not miss at all. They shouldn't fail to sign him to a new contract, because it's right there for them. He wants to stay. They want him. All they've got to do is cough up the cash. And I don't think the cash would be that much anyway. With Ozil and Alexis, it's a little bit different.
And it's scary to think that Wilshere could be negotiating with other clubs right now because he doesn't have a new contract. It's pathetic, really.
Yeah, I mean, the mismanagement of the Arsenal contract is just... it's ridiculous. Even looking beyond Wilshere, Ozil, Alexis, because all is out at the end of the year, and obviously that's a little bit of an extreme example because of his injury. But then players like Monreal, players like Giroud, Ramsey, Welbeck, all of their contracts, I think Ospina as well, maybe even Petr Cech, all of their contracts expire next summer. So this summer, if Arsenal want to unload those type of players, they're unloading them when they've got no contracts left. They're not going to get very good fees for them at all. Somebody like Matty Debussy can just leave. And really, this is a player that Arsenal should be getting 4 or 5 million for. You look at how well Chelsea are able to sell their players, because they make the decisions early in the contract. They say, well, no, we don't want this player, but we know we can get... I mean, they got 30 million for Andre Schürrle. That's just unbelievable. And Arsenal are continually selling players or allowing players to leave for less than their value. And a lot of it comes down to the mismanagement of contracts. Even Kieran Gibbs, for example, in the summer they got, was it 6.5, 7 million, something? They should have got at least 10, but his contract only had 1 year left, so no club was prepared to pay 15 million for left back with only 12 months left on his contract. And I don't blame them either. It's completely Arsenal's fault. It's a bit ridiculous, really. Let's move on to, rather than look at a transfer, let's look at another worried player in Alexander Lacazette, who he, more than the style of his play, the manner of his play, the personality of his play, was quite concerning on Sunday. He just looked disinterested, he looked a bit unmotivated, he was slouching, he was not sloppy, but I guess loose and kind of not really there. He wasn't really focused, like you said, he wasn't committed really. Are you concerned that this could be a situation where if Ozil leave and Alexis leaves, Lacazette's thinking, well, I want to leave as well now as well?
Yeah, I mean, you nailed it. It was saying he was almost pouting out there. Mm. And I don't blame him. Let me say that.
No, neither do I.
It really reminded me of the way Alexis would get in a similar situation where he didn't have the quality around him. It's just that Alexis is a much more demonstrative person and Lacazette's more shy, so rather than throw a tantrum, he just kind of mopes. And like I said, I don't blame him at all. It's a bummer to see, but it's like, what do you expect him to do? We don't know what Arsene Wenger promised him to come to Arsenal, but we know that Lacazette won a Champions League. Mm. He gave up Champions League to come to Arsenal. I have to imagine that at some point Arsene Wenger said, well, you're going to be playing with Alexis and Ozil, which is a great selling technique. Those are great players to play alongside.
Yeah,
and
especially for a striker as well.
Yeah, and every time those three were on the pitch together, they were fantastic. That's when our attack was at its best. Mm. And then you pull that rug out from underneath him, and you stick Lacazette, or you stick Welbeck and Iwobi behind him, which, here's a fun fact about those two. In the past two games, they have played a combined 345 minutes. That's Welbeck has played 180 minutes, and Iwobi has played whatever the rest of that is. I'm not going to do the math right now.
165.
Yeah. In that 345 combined minutes, they've created three chances between the two of them. Wow. All three have come from Iwobi. Welbeck has not created a single chance. Now, where is Lacazette supposed to get anything from? Mm. I mean, he's relying on Wilshere and Xhaka feeding him over the top passes, which works on occasion, but you can't live on a steady diet of over the top passes. You got to have something happening directly behind you, and there is absolutely nothing happening directly behind him. And it's almost like these are supposed to be your two creative attacking midfielders, and they've created so little for him. It's almost like a wall rather than it is a road for him to get chances down. And I do worry that this is something, because, I mean, I don't think it's got long-term problems building yet, but I do worry that, you know, this sours his mind a little bit towards the club, because he was promised one thing, and he's not getting that.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, the hope that we have is next time he comes out against Crystal Palace, we'll have new players. We'll have Ozil, we'll have whoever's replacing Alexis, and everything will be fine. But that's hoping, and that's relying on Ozil's phantom injuries going away and us solving the Alexis problem in less than a week, which is never a guarantee. And which, I mean, probably the only person more frustrated than fans right now has to be Lacazette, because this isn't the club that he was promised whenever he came over here. This is completely different, and you can see it on his face when he's out there.
Yeah, I know when Ozil was signed, Wenger kind of was able to coerce him into coming because of A, he was working with Wenger, who Ozil had a lot of respect for, but also because Wenger said, look, I'm going to sign lots of players, I'm going to spend money in the coming transfer windows, and I'm going to partner you with these wonderful players. I wonder if he said the same thing to Lacazette. And Lacazette's thinking, well, where are they? That not only are they not here, but they're actually leaving. Never mind. never mind coming. They're getting worse, not better. And I fear that Lacazette is thinking, what am I doing here? I've made a mistake. I've not got Champions League football, like you said, which is something that I think it was about a year before he signed, he said, I will not move for a club who does not have Champions League football. And he
did. He said that in the summer before.
Was it the summer? Yeah, so...
Yeah, it was the year.
Yeah, so really, it was clearly important to him to have Champions League football. Now, obviously, he went against those words in joining Arsenal, but that meant that there must have been quite a hurdle for Wenger to overcome in convincing him to sign. He's only adding to that hurdle, like you say. He's only making it more difficult for Lacazette to be happy at Arsenal. And that's a real issue, because if Lacazette leaves, suddenly your whole strike force, your whole front three, which, by the way, Arsenal have poured investment into, this is where their money is. They are expecting their front three to carry this team. They're the three most expensive signings in history, depending on what fee you have for Xhaka and Sanchez and Mustafi. They're probably the three highest earners. They're the three players who are genuinely world-class or close to world-class players in this squad, and that's probably it. These are the pillars on which this team is built, and if you lose all three, that has the makings of a team crumbling into mediocrity, and that was very much what Arsenal looked like on Sunday. They looked like a mediocre team. Moving on slightly, do you think there will be any other signings other than the Alexis saga this January window?
No, I liked when there was that brief bit of belief that we could get Aubameyang and Malcolm. There was that rumor that we could get them both for like 90 million, which sounds so great, but it's never going to happen.
No.
I mean, we know Arsene Wenger already hates the January window, so the least amount of business he needs to do in it, that's the bare minimum of what he's going to do. He's not going to try to do any more than that.
Mm-hmm.
I do think we have a good summer to look forward to, but the problem is we got to get through the rest of the season first,
yeah,
which is no small feat with the state that the club is in.
Yeah, and also there's an element of Arsenal in the Champions League next year, because that will make a huge difference as to what players they can bring in and what players they can keep. We obviously saw with Lacazette that they were able to convince one player, but I suspect there were players who rejected Arsenal or who would reject Arsenal by simply not being in the Champions League, and that's something that if they cannot secure qualification for that, whether that be through the Premier League or through the Europa League, really it is going to really hinder their progress in the summer.
Yeah, especially because you miss it once, it's fine. You can say, oh, it's just a hiccup. We'll be back next year. But then if you don't make it back the next year, people start to wonder, well, when will you be back? And, I mean, that was the trouble that Liverpool got in recent years. And even United, once they finished outside of the top four, it was like, well, getting back in is a hell of a lot harder than it was supposed to be.
Yes, absolutely. It suddenly becomes a pattern of not being in the Champions League, become the norm, not the exception to the rule. I guess let's look at that a little bit. In the Premier League table, Arsenal, after their loss, and United are currently winning as well. They're now 5 points behind Spurs. They're now 8 points behind Liverpool and Chelsea. They're probably going to end up being 11 points behind United. Is the top four out of reach already? Is that ridiculous to say?
Yeah, I don't think it's out of reach yet. I think it all comes down to what we do in January, though, and who we bring in, because it always amazes me how much one signing can do, how much that one signing can shake things up. And I really do believe that all you really got to do for this Arsenal team, there's still so much talent there. You just got to give them a shot, just some sort of injection. Mm. And anybody coming in for Alexis, who, again, I'm assuming here, but who I think was becoming a bit of a toxic presence with how little he wanted to be there. If you bring in anybody to replace him and get rid of that, I do think that this team has enough fight to turn it around and at least make the top four competitive again. Maybe they don't make it, but at the very least, I think they'll fight for it. And again, Chelsea, Tottenham, and Liverpool, none of those three have convinced me that they're on cruise control and just going to cruise out to wins for the rest of the season. All three of them have shown a lot of frailties. And, you know, Liverpool have done the most to address those frailties, and it's showing. But I still don't think Tottenham either win 4-0 or they can't seem to score anything. So I don't think that the top four is out. I think it's barring some a continuation of losses for Arsenal. I don't think it's going to be out of the picture for a long time.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. It's a scary, scary future for this club. It's pretty depressing, really. And again, it's the same, isn't it? We're having the same debate as we had last year, as we had the year before, and the year before that. Is Arsene Wenger going to leave? Who's going to come in for him? Are our best players going to be sold? Who are they going to be replaced with? Are we ever going to be able to defend? Is Jack Wilshere going to stay fit? It's the same questions every single time. It feels like I'm still, you know, 17 and just talking about the same things over and over again. It's a bit repetitive. Before we wrap up, is there anything else you would like to despair over? Because this club will cock something up some way.
Not despair, but okay. I see the Arsenal under-23s beat the Manchester United under-23s 4-0.
Excellent.
Our boy Eddie Nketiah scored a brace. Vlad Dragomir, who was playing left wing back, scored.
Right, okay.
And the forgotten man, Jeff Rin Adelaide, scored.
Did he?
And excellent. Kept a clean sheet. So Mavropanos' first ever appearance with Arsenal was a clean sheet. So there's that going for us.
Mm. Yes, and hopefully those players won't be ruined like all the others that Wenger's ruined in the last 4 or 5 years. I saw there was a list of the, I think it was like the top 25 European players under the age of 23 or something. And the list was rubbish because it had Dele Alli at like 23rd or something, and they had Gabriel Jesus down at 15th or something, and they had like some really terrible players up near the top. But the overriding point was that there was no Arsenal player on the list at all. And as I read down the list, I was like, to be honest, no Arsenal player deserves to be on the list. There was no Arsenal player that I can think of who's under the age of 22, 23, who I can say, yeah, they are the future of this Arsenal team, and they, in terms of talent, they deserve to be recognised as one of the up-and-coming players in the Premier League and on the continent. That's a problem for a team that requires young players to come through because they don't spend enough in the window, but also prides itself on young players coming through, isn't it?
Yeah, and I struggle with their current youth setup because there are a lot of guys in that team that I think could really be something special. I mean, Reece Nelson, Eddie Nketiah, but we've been here before where we've had these... Mm. I mean, even Rin Adelaide was in a situation like 2 years ago where we thought, this is the real deal. He's going to be here soon.
Yeah, the Emirates Cup when he was unbelievable.
Yeah, and granted, he tore his ACL, I believe, was his injury, but he was out for a long time, so that doesn't help. But at the same time, it's like just with every other problem, we've been here before. We have all of these talented kids that everybody wants to believe is the next big deal, and at some point you just have to keep asking yourselves, well, why is this time different than last time? And the short answer is there's really no reason to believe that this is any different, unless you just want to keep believing, which I do. I'll keep believing. But I have no reason to. I only believe because it sure as hell beats trying to accept that this is just going to be the same old thing.
Yeah. I don't believe. But I choose to I choose to laugh at the situation because it is that hopeless and that repetitive that I sometimes have to remind myself that Arsenal are a professional football club being run by professional people who are supposedly intelligent and aware of the situation and aware of their problems and what needs doing, because just their actions don't make sense. One of my friends was texting with the other day. He's not an Arsenal fan, but he's well into his football. He was saying, "I've just seen your away record. Your away record looks terrible." And then he said, and then he texted me again saying, "Why haven't you given Wiltshire a new contract?" And then he texted me another question that was fairly obvious. It was something like, "Why isn't Theo Walcott not been sold?" or something like that. And I just said, the answer to those questions is not possible, because this team doesn't do things normally. They just don't do things that teams should do. They're idiots. They don't make the right decisions. They are unreasonable, not in terms of the the word would usually be used in terms of unreasonable in terms of being difficult. They're unreasonable in terms of there is literally no reason to what they do. They have no pattern or no rhyme. It just drives me nuts. Drives me absolutely nuts.
That said, it does look like Theo Walcott might be sold this month, and they're increasingly. There's a lot more rumors popping up that Everton, I mean, even Sam Allardyce even came out and said, yeah, we want Theo Walcott. Which, honestly, to
which
me,
is
any
rare.
Interest,
is rare.
Yeah. Any interest in Theo Walcott should be met with a sale, because if anybody's willing to pay for him, and I'm not saying this, I mean, we do give Walcott a hard time, but, I mean, the guy came on against Bournemouth, and he was flagged offsides twice, and he only touched the ball seven times. Not
when he was through and he was flagged offside, the first person I thought of was you, just with your head in your hands going, oh gosh, he's offside again. He does, I do think he lives in that kind of inside right channel behind the fullback, and then if the fullback is the deepest person in the defence, then he's automatically offside. It just happens all the time. Well, there we go. Theo Walcott's leaving. Do you think, obviously, Arsenal have been trying to cut dead wood a little bit in the last window and in this window. Do you think there will be any other players to leave in January?
No. I mean, I'd like to say that we cut more dead wood. But I mean, we got rid of Coughlin. I'd like to see Elneny go, but I don't see that happening. I mean, I like Elneny plenty, but he's just not the level that we should be employing, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, I mean, the problem with selling somebody like Elneny would be you would have to be able to find a replacement, because while he's not very good, just in terms of numbers, if you lose Elneny, suddenly you've got. With Coughlin already going, you've only got Xhaka, Ramsey and Wilshere left. Two of those are very injury prone, one of them's rubbish, and then you've got Santi Cazorla, who's stuck in the physio room forevermore. So while selling somebody like Onene or Debussy or Walcott or those players, there is a question of numbers that does have to be balanced, I guess. I mean, certainly, if you sold Walcott and Sanchez and brought in Aubameyang and Malcolm, that'd be quite nice, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I would. I love the idea of selling Walcott and Alexis and replacing both of them, because that's one hell of a step forward. Mm. But, I mean, I entertained the idea that Malcolm would be brought in to replace Walcott, and then we get someone else to replace Alexis, which would be a dream come true, but...
Yeah, I mean, it's a dream that isn't true.
Exactly.
it would be a dream come true, but it won't. Because this is Arsenal Football Club, and they are the shatterer of transfer dreams. If there is anything that they are brilliant at, it is offering hope to a hopeless fan base in transfers and then snatching it away from them before they go and spend $50 million on player X. I guess that's probably it for us, isn't it, for this week?
Yeah.
Yeah, we've rambled on for about an hour or so. We instead of splitting it up into the games as we usually do, we thought, with it being such an important point in time with the terrible result against Bournemouth and obviously with the January transfer window coming to a sort of climax 15 days, 16 days into it, we thought it would be useful to have just an extended period of time where we can both share our thoughts on lots of different problems and different things that are going on with the club. Is there anything else, Arsenal or even on non-Arsenal related, that you want to bemoan or get off your chest?
No, not today. I'm good.
you're very relaxed. That's it must be the American, because I'm always moaning about something or other. let's wrap it up there. Thank you very much for listening, firstly. We do appreciate everybody who listens. Please get in contact with us on Twitter or Facebook or on our website. You can find us at paininthearsenal.com. We always love to hear your questions. We'll do our best to answer them on the show. And if you have any comments or any feedback or anything, please get in contact with us. We always like conversing with our fans and our listeners and talking about the many issues that are precluding us from supporting this club properly, because we all hate it. Thank you very much for listening. We will see you next Monday after Arsenal lose to Crystal Palace. Thank you very much. Goodbye.